Hey everyone, just before we begin this week's episode, I have a quick favour to ask you all. If you love the show, it would mean so much if you could take a moment to follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to right now, or share it with a friend, tell them all about it, or leave a quick comment. And when you see the videos on social media, please comment there too, because it really, really helps me to keep this podcast going. Thank you all so, so much.
We all know how valuable photos and video clips of a loved one are. But have you thought about capturing their full story in their own words as an audio podcast or as a video? At GK Media, we've been working with families, hospices and nursing homes across Ireland over the past 10 years to help preserve precious memories. We help you celebrate the voices, special moments and wisdom of your loved ones by recording your meaningful conversations together. Record in our Galway studio, or we can travel to you bringing our own recording equipment. Whether it's a tribute, life story, or message for future generations, we capture it with care and compassion. Visit gkmedia.ie/legacy and let us help you tell the story that deserves to be remembered.
There are very few places in the world where you don't have to explain your grief, where no one expects you to smile or pretend. This is one of those rare places, a quiet, grounded day where you can simply show up exactly as you are. On Sunday, October 19th, we'll gather for the grief workshop at Fitzpatrick's Castle Hotel in Killiney, Dublin, a peaceful place by the sea, created for anyone carrying grief. Throughout the day, you'll be gently supported by expert facilitators, people who understand grief and who offer real tools to help through movement, breath, journaling and stillness. You'll be guided back to yourself in quiet, compassionate ways. And you'll be in a room with others who get it. There's something powerful about sitting with people who don't need you to explain anything because they've felt it too. The setting is calm and beautiful, a soft place to land, to breathe, and to take time for yourself, time that's so rarely available in everyday life. By the end of the day, strangers may not feel like strangers, because when grief meets grief, something shifts. Some people leave with lifelong friends, others leave with something softer inside. And maybe just as importantly, you'll have spent time remembering your person, honouring them quietly, without distraction, without apology, because they deserve space too. Early bird tickets are now available at griefireland.com. Spaces are limited, and if it feels right for you, I'd love to welcome you. Hi, so I'm back today with the lovely Laura Crane, who has joined me from Dublin. I was just saying to her, I'm getting all the dubs in the house.
All the dubs are on the way down to you.
So you came down today and I'm delighted to have you here. So you're better known on, I suppose, social media as With Love and Dreams.
Yes.
With Love and Dreams. Yeah. So that's a business that you have.
Yeah.
And ironically, I suppose it makes sense that you're here with me, because what you do is you really help people who are grieving in a way, because mm-hmm. you are a resin artist and you can make jewellery from ashes. Do you want to maybe start off there and tell me kind of how you got into that?
Yeah, so I started with Love and Dreams during lockdown as a bit of a hobby.
Yeah.
Because I was working, and then in the evenings, obviously, we were all locked in. Couldn't do anything. And I remember TikTok at the time was only kind of starting, and I start watching videos of people doing resin art and watching them in America, and thought, oh,
it was all the rage.
Yeah, I just thought it was amazing. I was like, what hobby can I do? I've made 1,000 banana breads already. Like, you know, it's not going anywhere. But I just started it as a hobby. When I got COVID that Christmas, the 2020 COVID, and I ordered a little resin set online and started making little key rings and coasters. And from there, I just kind of fell in love with working with it. It was like a way of switching my brain off and just really getting involved in it. And then
lovely,
I was kind of doing it about a year and a bit, as I said, just as a hobby, making little small bits. And someone reached out to me, asked me would I work with their father-in-law's ashes. And at first I was like, oh no, I wouldn't want to do that. not the fact that they were actually ashes. It was just I'd never worked with anything like that before. So I was a bit on the fence of, oh God, like this is so personal to someone. What if I make a mistake? Or so she said, no, I really want you to do something with them. So I said, look, let me go off and practice with other materials similar. And I did. And then she came back to me a couple of months. I came back to her a couple of months later and said, look, I've been practicing, but I will let you know it will be my first time to actually use someone's ashes. She was more than happy to give them to me. And from there then, I just found a whole new love for the resin art. So that's when I kind of started to pivot the business into more ashes, which is cremains, fabrics and hair from people and pets that have passed away, as well as flowers from funerals and weddings. So preserving the flowers from someone's wedding day or whether it's someone's funeral when they have the spray on top of the casket, they get some flowers as well preserved. So
wow. And what was that first time like when you did get the remains? And
do you know what, it was like a whole different level of peace, if that makes sense. So when I was doing it, I just the main thing, and it's still my main thing that I keep in my head, is if this was someone belonging to me, how would I want someone to treat them and how would I want them to be handled and cared for? So that was the main thing. So I think the first time I actually done the cremains, I actually went out to the girl and collected them, sat with her chatting for ages about the person. Now, to be honest, I can't remember the full story now because it was like 3 years ago, but I know it was her father-in-law, and she then gave me them. I went off and I made the piece for her. She sent me on photographs and the story, and that's also as well where I came up with doing the stories behind them, because I was like, that's such a lovely story. Can I share that with people? And she was like, oh, I'd love you to share that online so I can show him the video of it being made. And because that's what I do, I post all the videos of stuff being made online. Whether it's posted online or not, I still record it from start to finish. So the customer or client can see how it's been handled, how wow. It's treated. They can see then, you know, the whole process of it being made. And then 99% of people are happy to share their stories with me because they like the kind of comfort of it and someone talking about their loved one as well. So they kind of tell me bullet points and I'll turn it into a story of their loved one or their pet as well that has passed.
So what you do is when you come on your social media, mm-hmm. you'll have the remains and you will talk about the person. It's yeah. so lovely. And say, this is whoever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll tell the story of the person. It's kind of, as well as it's the person who's given it to me, kind of gives me their story basically. Like they'll just say like, oh, this was my mom. She was 90 something when she passed. She got cancer, she battled it, she 10 kids, and that's all they could tell me. But then I'll turn it into like a nicer story, not a nicer story, but a nice kind of flowing story over it, a more kind of caring way of nurturing the story as well, to be a bit sensitive around it as well when making the piece.
And like that has to be a tough role as well. And I was just saying to you, in some ways we're kind of similar because
yeah.
I hold a lot of space, I suppose, for people, and I hear every single day, I'll hear a different story. Yeah. I lost my mom, my brother, my child, mm-hmm. whatever it is. And, you know, people always ask me, is it hard? Like, it must be hard. It can be. Like, yeah. I suppose you're only human and you're taking a piece of that pain each time, mm-hmm. sometimes I feel you do take yeah. it with you, particularly if it's a real tragic story. Like, it's yes. hard not to be moved. Like, have you come across that where you've had
tragic? Plenty of times. Like, yeah. Do you know, every story is a sad story. Like, any death is a sad story. But there has been times where, like, I remember there's one that stands out that was a baby. She was only 6 weeks old and had Cott death syndrome. And her mom, like, broke my heart. Like, the whole story alone broke my heart, but seeing her mom, like, she already had, I think it was 2 kids already, and like, it just broke my heart, honest to God. Like, but I feel I need to keep a strong front on for them, because it's okay for them to break down, but I don't want to start crying and then upset them. Where if they start crying first, I don't mind then letting my wall down to be like, look, this is okay. So that's all. Like, I moved into a new studio this year in January. And I love it because I can bring people in now, and I've had people come into me and we've sat there for an hour. Like, it's only meant to be like, you know, just drop in and have a little chat. An hour, the two of us be sitting there crying, or they'll be sitting there crying. They just love the feeling of being able to talk about the person, because I feel like I don't know if it's just me or if it's just an Irish thing that when someone dies, we don't talk about them very often after they've died. It's like you don't want to upset people or you don't want to bring them back up or you don't want to open up that can of worms. And that's what I like about what I do is like, you know, someone might get a necklace with someone's ashes inside it and someone might say to them, oh, that's a lovely necklace. And then they can say, oh, well, this is my dad. And they can have that conversation again about their father or their mother or okay. someone, you know.
Yeah. So it's, the jewellery is so meaningful because mm-hmm. it helps people to remember their loved one, but also, you know, it brings them up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a nice little conversation starter, like, yeah. or other pieces that I've made, like other figurines that I've made with ashes in or funeral flowers. You know, I've had people say, oh, I've had their urn sitting in the house for 5 or 6 years. People see it, but they don't mention the person or they don't look at it. They don't make eye contact with it. But yeah, when I've had the little figurines out, they've said, oh, this is lovely. And then we get to have a conversation about the person that's passed. And I know it's sad to talk about people in the past, but it's also really nice as well to remember them.
Yeah, that for makes sure. Sense. Yeah, yeah, of course it does. It makes huge yeah. sense. Yeah.
Even if you do get upset talking about it, like that's one thing I've found is like, it's kind of nice to get that off your chest. You obviously needed to get it off your chest in a way, you know?
Yeah, 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 for sure. I'm a huge advocate. I'm always saying it here.
Yeah.
That is extremely, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, like if I didn't believe in talking about those who've passed, I would not be here. So it's really, yeah. it's more than just nice. It's really important
exactly,
for people
yeah.
to be remembered. And for those loved ones left behind, it's important that they can have a place and a space to talk. So mm-hmm. like what you're doing is really important. It's helping them, those people that are grieving, you know, that are met with silence, to be able to bring it up. And,
yeah.
you know, it's lovely. So I suppose when you started it all, you probably hadn't experienced any type of grief or loss yourself. But then
no.
shortly after that,
yes,
you yourself experienced some loss. And I wanted to kind of say, I was chatting to you as you came in. When we talk about loss, a lot of times I was saying you'll hear the stories that are extremely tragic and oftentimes, you know, they mightn't be like, I suppose when you lose somebody older.
Mm-hmm. Like a stereotypical death.
Yes, exactly.
In that sense, yeah, it's the course.
The normal course of life is what I'm trying
yes,
to say. So
yeah.
the normal course of life is that we all get old and we die.
Yeah.
However, before that, you'll have tragedies.
Mm-hmm.
And people are taken way before their time.
Yes.
And I have found during this and the work that I do that there are people then who become very quiet and feel like they're not entitled to grief because their yeah. person was older
yeah.
and it's the natural course of life. They came
yeah,
to the end
exactly,
of their life.
Yeah.
But then that to me feels sad because then I don't know if they feel entitled to talk about their grief or their loss. And it's mm-hmm. really important because
yeah.
it's not this or that, it's this and that, because
yeah.
of course it's wildly different to lose mm-hmm. a child or someone who dies by suicide or, you know, murder or car crashes
yeah.
and all of that are so unexpected, so sudden, and there is space held for those people.
Mm-hmm.
However, when you have someone who passes from natural course or whatever,
mm-hmm.
those people get silenced. But I'm so happy that you are here to talk about your loss, which
yeah.
is your grandparents.
Yeah.
So do you want to tell me maybe the first loss that you experienced then after that?
Yeah, so I, it was my first loss was in 2022, which was my granddad. And he had Alzheimer's for about 17 years. And obviously in his last couple of years, he'd kind of gone downhill, but he was still at home with my nanny and my mom looked after him as well. Like, so what I always remember, it was strange because I always remember with him, it was like we knew the Alzheimer's would kill him in the end. Well, he'd passed from the Alzheimer's in the end, but it was, he actually passed from a stroke. So it was quite, even though he was passing for, say, a long time, it was quite quick okay. as well. And I always remember I'd gone to London for a night. One night I went and I went over for work with my partner and I literally got a phone call on the day we were coming back to say, your granddad's actually taken really ill. You need to get home as soon as possible. And my sister was in London at the time in college. And we were like, we need to get her home, but we don't want to freak her out because she actually was in Brighton, but was up in London that day for some audition or something. And we didn't know if she had her passport with her. So I was trying to figure out, oh my God, has she got her passport? We need to get her home. Anyway, thankfully we all got home. And I think he lived for about a day or two after that. And then sadly passed, and that was my first experience with death. And to be honest, even though it was so heartbreaking, it was quite nice that we were all there in the family home, all together around him. He wasn't in pain. He was, you know, it was like an end of an era that we knew, like, he had the Alzheimer's. This is how he's going to end. You know, like, it still, it breaks my heart because obviously I loved him so much and I was in with him every week. And, you know, he mightn't have remembered us, but I remembered him. And that was the first kind of forced grief in the family for me. And then the following year, which was 2023, when I fell out of love with what I was doing, I kind of took a bit of a hit with the business because he'd passed. Then I got COVID. After the funeral, loads of us got COVID. I was bedbound, feeling miserable, because it was quite a shock. And then I was trying to pick back up the business and wasn't really. I was kind of half-assing it a bit. And then I think it was like the September time, I started doing markets and I was like, right, this is it now. I'm going to give it my all. Going into 2023, I was like, this is my year now. I'm putting everything into it. I really want to take it off. And we were about halfway into the year and my other granddad, who was 90, he was going 91, like such a fit, healthy man, you know, had his few little bits wrong with him, but like other than that, he was still going out and about, not a bother on him. I always remember one day I dropped into him and he was real hoarse and husky and he was saying he had a sore throat. And I think it was like April, May time. And I was like, maybe it's a bit of a cold or something. And anyway, I know my aunties and all start like bringing him to appointments and that. And then they found a lump in his neck. And it turned out he had a very aggressive form of cancer. And he was given basically 4 to 6 weeks to live. And I remember going, no, that can't be true. I was like, he's like the healthiest old man like I know. And I wouldn't even call him old because he was so young at heart.
What was his name?
Harry.
Harry.
So yeah, Charles, which is so funny because I was only saying to you during the week, I was like, his anniversary is actually tomorrow.
Yeah.
And on the way here, I grabbed a can of Coke Zero out of the fridge.
No.
And I looked at it when I was going to pay for it and I turned and it has the names on it. It said Charles on it. And I was like, oh my God. That's, I was like, wow. This is crazy.
That's amazing.
It's such a sign. Like, so anyway, I remember we were all up the walls because we were like, no, he's like so grand, like there's not a bother on him, he's just a bit hoarse. And you're going, how is this man in 6 weeks time going to be dead? Like, and I remember then we were all down the house and I think we, like, there was always someone there with him. So I remember for them 6 weeks I was in every day with him in the house. Sorry, he was in the house for 3 weeks and then he did start getting quite sick and frail and then he was put into the hospice. And they kind of said when he goes into the hospice you're only kind of there about a week and a half, and he was there for 3. And he talked to everyone. Even though his voice was gone, he did not stop talking. He was such a talker, probably where I get it from.
So tell me, I want to slow down a little bit with him because I know you were quite close to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about him. What was he like?
So he was such a character. He was a messer, such a messer. He was a foodie and he used to be a bus conductor. And every time you'd start a story, he'd always bring it back to his days of bus conducting or going to get a bag of chips with my nanny when they were growing up. All his stories revolved around food or buses. Literally. So I remember actually for his 90th, I brought him on the vintage tea tours in Dublin.
Oh, because
I was like, what do you get someone that loves food and loves buses? I was like, bring him on a bus and there's food on it. I was like, you'll have the time of his life. We had such crack on the bus because there's a guy giving a tour. And my granddad was shouting over him, telling me stories of all the places that we've seen. And I actually have a funny video I was recording somewhere and it was like an old hospital in town. And you can hear my granddad in the back going, and that's where I got my appendix out. You know, he was just such a character and he was always so open-minded and just loved life. You know, one of these guys.
So he got this diagnosis and was he told himself?
So we were kind of told he didn't know, but I think he had an idea. So he knew he was sick and they basically said because it was such an aggressive form of cancer, there was no treatment for him. And then obviously with his age as well, like he was 90, he went 91. And they were like, with the age that he is, probably operating wouldn't be ideal. Either way, it wasn't going to be a good outcome. So he was at home and I remember it was like the 3 weeks that he was still at home, like all my cousins and us, like I'm the second oldest on my dad's side. So all my cousins are younger than me and they're all great. Like I love all my cousins and that. And we'd be up in the room chatting to him. And I remember it was boiling out. Oh my God, it was so hot. I just always remember it was just such a hot 3 weeks. And we were all cramped into this little room around him in bed telling stories, well, trying to tell stories because he was the storyteller. And we'd such great laugh with him. And I remember one of the days, like the type of person he was, the carers were coming in the evenings to kind of help him and that. And it was like they'd come in at 8 o'clock, say, and 8 o'clock came around, the carers came and like one of my dad or one of the aunties come up and was like, you have to leave the room now. Like the carers are here for granted. And he's like, oh no, wait, let them come up and I'll pretend I'm dead in the bed. And he would lay there like pretending he was dead and all of us around him. And then he'd jump up and give us all a fright. You know, like that was just, he was so funny. And I used to feel sorry for the carers because like, what are they going to go into? Like he's going to pretend he's dead and then give them a fright, like, you know. But yeah, so we have lovely memories like that. Obviously I have lovely memories of growing up with him. Like he had a mobile down in Arklow, him and my nanny, and like, you know, he'd bring us fishing and, you know, down the beach for years, like growing up and that. And I've very fond memories of growing up with him. But then when he went into the hospice, it was so, I remember the day that he was actually taken off in the ambulance, I passed by the house that morning by chance. I never would have been in the morning. I'd always be in the evening. And I seen the ambulance outside the house and I ran in and he was on the edge of the bed and he was quite upset and he's like, oh, they're bringing me into the hospital for checkups. They're bringing me to the hospital. I don't think I'll be back here and all. And I was trying not to obviously cry in front of him, but then he started and then I started. We were all kind of crying and I was like, it's okay. Like, you know, they're just going to make sure you're all right. And he's like, I'm not good. And then he got into the hospice and I was dreading going into the hospice to see him because I'd never been in a hospice before and I'd heard stories of the hospice is lovely, it's really nice. But I was thinking, are people just saying that, you know, do people just say, oh, hospices are lovely because you're going, it's a place people go to die. How could it be lovely? But it was just so, we went to Harold Cross Hospice and I remember going in going, oh God, what's this going to be like? I think I sat in the car park for about 20 minutes before I actually went in. And I went in and he was sitting in the bed watching the telly with a cup of tea and biscuits and he was grand sitting chatting. But I just had this vision of once he was in there, he was really sick. Like, I knew he was really sick, but you know that image that you kind of get in your head? So he was there for 3 weeks. And when he went into the hospice, we had the worst 3 weeks of rain. So when he was at home, it was the hottest it had ever been. And then when he was in there, it just rained constantly. And I always just remember the big windows at his side. And I could be sitting there and it'd be lashing rain. And he'd be talking about, oh, this is great for the plants. Like, you know, they're going to grow up and be lovely. And then there was a pigeon that used to come in and they'd start feeding the pigeon outside his door because my uncles and my dad and all race pigeons. So we thought it was quite funny that of all the birds to be at him was a pigeon. And then I remember the last week he kind of took a bit of a turn. And that's when they started like the morphine and the pump and stuff with him. And I remember from my other granddad, I think he'd like maybe one or two pumps of morphine and then he passed. And I think my granddad Harry had about four. I was like, there's nothing killing this man. I was like, he has so much life left to live. Like we thought he was going to get to 100, you know. And I remember when he was passing, I remember like I kept ringing my mom because it was my dad's dad. But I was like, I'd ring my mom just to keep in check with her. And I remember the Thursday he passed. So none of us had been in to see him then that week because he wasn't well and he didn't look good. And, you know, they were kind of going, we don't want you to remember him like this. And I remember that morning we got a phone call. I think it was when the aunties rang us and said, look, if you want to come in, just me and my brother, because we were the two eldest, and kind of say our goodbyes, we could. And I remember going, okay, yeah. So I flew down. And again, I wasn't thinking then he was going to look sick. I just thought he'd be like himself asleep in bed. And I remember going in on my aunties and uncles and dad and all were there. And they'd been there all week sleeping on the floor around him because they knew he was about to go. And I remember going in and seeing him and it was just so heartbreaking. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, it was one of them things. Sorry. Oh, it was just one of them things I wasn't expecting when I went in. But it was still, I was just so glad I got to say goodbye to him. Because obviously every time I'd left the hospice, I said goodbye to him thinking this could be the last time. But that time I knew, right, this is definitely it, even though he couldn't hear me. Like, I knew he could, in a way. But it was just so sad to see him like that. And then I remember going home, and obviously I was like, right. But every day I was like, has anything happened? Has anything happened? And I was, no, he's fine, he's fine. He's still the same, still the same. And even when we left on Thursday, I was like, is this how he's been all week? And they're like, yeah, he's still the exact same. Nothing has changed. It'll probably be tomorrow. But we just wanted just to come in today. And I remember finishing up work early that day, and I was like, you know what, I'm going to go to Lidl and buy loads of pizzas and food and bring them up to all my aunties and uncles and my mum and dad, because they haven't been home. Like, they literally haven't been home. And I was in the queue in Lidl, and I got home and I went to my mum's house first, and I was like, I'll cook in her house. And I literally had loads of pizza. I put the oven on, put them all in. My mum started ringing me. I was like, oh, hey. I was like, I have food for you. I'm on my way up to you. And she's like, he's after passing. And I was like, isn't it typical when I'm cooking food of all the things he loved? But yeah, I remember that. It was kind of not a relief, because obviously we didn't want him to go. But after seeing him the way he was, it was a relief, because I was like, oh God, I couldn't imagine. Like, I just kept thinking of like my dad and my mum and my aunties and uncles having to sit and look at him like that for a week. And I only got to see him for 15, 20 minutes, you know, and they had to sit all week and listen to him, or, you know, be there with him. And it's just so hard. Like, and then we had the funeral. It was kind of then all a bit of a blur then after that, even though we knew he was passing, it was still all a bit of a blur, because it was just so quick. It was 6 weeks, and it was like probably the longest, quickest 6 weeks ever, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like, it went in such a blink of an eye. But yeah, when you're going to the house every day or to the hospice every day, it was just like, so it was like, oh my God, like these have got this diagnosis wrong. It has to be wrong. And unfortunately they weren't wrong. And I remember the funeral was absolutely beautiful. He had a humanist funeral. He wasn't religious. So I don't know the full, well, I do kind of know some of it, but I wouldn't know it in great detail. But I know he grew up in a Protestant Catholic family. So when he grew up, he was like, I don't believe in religion, and that's fine. Like, you know, and it was a humanist funeral. It was probably one of the first ones I've went to. Well, I've been to kind of a few smaller things that were humans, and his one was just so lovely to hear people tell stories of him and have pictures of him. And it was really him, you know, it was just perfect for him. And the crowd that turned out from as well, all his neighbours and old friends that I had heard that came up from places to see, like to be there for the funeral and all, was just so lovely. Lovely to see. And I remember after that then, like that with the business, I took about a couple of weeks off, because obviously when I was going through all that, I wasn't really doing much with the business, because obviously I was working full time anyway and then doing that on the side. And then my great aunt, who was like a nanny to me, she took sick, and then she was in hospital for, oh God, it was like 6 months or 7 months, I think. And then she passed on in the November. And then my nanny, who was my granddad's wife, passed in the December. And then in the January, Alan's granddad passed in the January.
That's your partner?
Yeah, my partner. Sorry, Alan. Yeah, my partner, Alan. And like, I'm with him, oh God, what, 12, 13 years. So his granddad's nearly like another granddad to me. Like, you know, lovely man as well. But literally in the space of 6 months, we had like 4 deaths in the family. And they were big deaths, because they were all big characters to us, like growing up. And I'd be a family person, and Alan would be a quite fat, like his nanny and granddad's was like his go-to place. Like, you'd go every Tuesday and Thursday, and, you know, no matter who was there, it was always someone in the family would be there. Or if there's birthdays, you know, it was always go down a Tuesday and Thursday, you know. So it was quite a hard couple of months. And I just kind of said, I just can't do this. Like, I can't do a business and go through all this grief. And I remember my granddad was actually, sorry, I'll go back a little bit. My granddad was cremated, and he's the first, my other granddad was buried. So he was the first family member for me to be cremated. And I remember when I went back kind of doing my business, I think I took about 2 weeks off from orders had come in, but I kind of said to people, look, I won't be taking them in yet. And I remember getting the first box of ashes off someone, the first one after my granddad, and I just couldn't open it. And then I kind of thought, oh no, is this it now? Am I not going to be able to do this anymore, you know? And I remember my dad at the time, because he knew what I'd done, like my dad knows what I do, and I remember him kind of then asking when he'd seen that I had someone's ashes, and was like, well, what's it like? What are they like? Because he obviously didn't know and he was trying to ask, and I was like, oh, it's actually really nice. Like, there's a little slip inside and it has a letter that says who it was and the date they passed and where they were cremated. And he was just like, oh, right. And I could kind of see he was more curious about it then, because obviously we had someone ourselves.
Mm.
And I actually remember messaging the customer. I was like, look, I just have had a death in the family and I just can't bring myself to making the piece yet. I was like, do you mind if it's a bit delayed? And they were so lovely. They were like, take as much time as you need. I'm in no rush for it back. They're like, take as much time as you need. So I think it was about 2 or 3 weeks had passed then. And then I kind of went back to him. But in a way, it nearly gave me an even bigger respect in a set. Like, I kind of contradicted myself because I always have so much respect for the person.
But now
I had empathy. It was more of a empathetic understanding. And yeah, I don't know what it was, but it was something that I think changed completely then the way I done it again, where it's weird because nothing changed, if that makes sense. It was more of a mindset. Nothing physically changed. Everything was the exact same of how I handled them and cared for them.
I know what you're saying, but so sympathy is when you feel bad for somebody, but empathy is when you understand.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it was like a whole different mindset changed. And yeah, it was just, it kind of lit up the business for me in a way then, because then we came into 2024 and I was like, right, it's now or never. I'm either packing the business in, because obviously I'd had so many deaths. One, literally it was the November, December and January. There was the 3 deaths in a row then. And I was just like, oh, I just can't grasp this at the minute. Like, my head was all over the place. And, you know, it's so hard seeing, like, obviously your family passing away, but then seeing, like, my dad lose his mom and dad in the space of 6 months. My mom lose her great aunt, who was like another mom to her. Like, you know, then Al lose his granddad, who was such a big character in his life. And, you know, I was kind of going, I think I just need to take time for myself, or I need to throw myself right into this in the deep end and just swim until I can keep going, you know. And that's what I done. I said, you know what, I need to be busy. I need to keep working. I was like, if I don't, I'll end up miserable. Like, obviously I was miserable, sad at the time, but I'm one of these people, I have to be doing something. I can't sit still. And I threw myself into it and it worked out amazing. It was like the business just completely, not, I won't say skyrocketed. I'm not like a multi-millionaire business, but it's like I've connected with so many more people. I've, you know, lovely customers that I've had. Lovely people that send me messages all the time. Like, it was like a whole new community of people had gathered around to watch what I was doing. And it was just really lovely thing to see and to grow it.
Mm. Amazing.
Yeah.
So you, as we said at the start, you're obviously working with people all the time who are grieving.
Yeah.
So now you have this deep understanding of loss and your own grief. In terms of your own grief, how did that manifest for you? Or did you find any, you know, change in yourself in terms of your grief?
Yeah, I did. I think it's also because I'm obviously getting old. We all get older as it is and you do lose people. But I think for me, a big thing was thinking back on things of school. Like, I remember being in primary school and there was girls in class that was like, oh, I was out yesterday. I was at my nanny's funeral. And we were like 7. And I was 29 when I lost, well, 28, 29 when I started losing my grandparents. And I was like, I was so lucky. Like, I had them for so long, even though I didn't want them to go anywhere, you know. And then I also look at my, like, my nanny that's still with me. I still have one grandparent, my nanny, who, oh, she's my best friend. Like, we got on, like, we have our Friday night gossips. I go to her every Friday night and we have tea, cake, and I have to tell her everything. Sometimes I have to make things up because I have a very boring life at times. But, you know, and then I look at, like, you know, her or just elderly people in general, and I just think how much grief they've gone through.
Yeah.
You know, when I look at elder, like, my nanny has lost her grandparents, her parents, her husband, her sister, and she still sits and chats and has a smile on her face and, you know. Or I look at other elderly people or other people that I have dealt with customer wise, like, that, you know, they're only young, have lost their parents. And I'm going, oh my God, they have to go now the rest of their lives without, for however long they're going to live.
Mm.
And it's just given me, I always had that, you know, treat people how you would like to be treated. That's something that I always kind of stand by. But now I think I have an even deeper level of it, of in like, you know, someone says, oh, I lost my dad 10 years ago. Oh, it's grand. You know, it's the Irish thing. Everything's grand. But I just think, how have they managed 10 years without their mom or their dad or their sister or their brother, or, you know, and it's just more, I think I have more of an empathy with people now.
Yeah.
Not that I wouldn't have been empathetic before. I would have been obviously upset for people or, you know, send my condolence and that. But now, you know, when I know someone that someone has passed on them, I'll make more of an effort to be at the funeral or make more of an effort to be around them after they've lost someone. Where before you think, oh, I'll just drop them a text. It's a nice thought, which is a lovely thought. Don't get me wrong. When someone sends you a message, it does mean a lot. But I think showing up for people now as well is a bigger thing, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So with the people that you come across with the work that you do,
mm-hmm.
I suppose, what have you learnt from all of that? I suppose it's kind of what you're just explaining, really.
Yeah.
It probably gives you a deeper appreciation.
The one thing that I is so sad and hard to say is that life goes on.
Mm.
And it's, you have to either go with it or you get ate up by it. And that's one thing that I've noticed with a lot of customers, like they've like that lost children or they've lost, you know, someone very close, like their husbands or their wives. And you kind of think, oh my God, like how are they? Like I think if I was to lose Alan tomorrow, my world would fall apart. But these people are getting up and they're still going about their day and they have to, you know. And I always remember there's a story of a woman that I done flowers for her. Her husband passed away and she's only young, like she'd be in her 30s, early 40s maybe. And they're together since they're like in their teens. And I just kept going like, that's her best friend. Like how, you know, and he passed away. And I think it was like a couple of weeks before her birthday. And on her birthday, she did knock at the door and it was a bunch of flowers. Her husband had arranged to be delivered for her birthday before he passed because he knew he was dying with cancer and he knew he wasn't going to make it to her birthday.
Okay, I'm not able now.
No, like, but this, it broke my heart. Like, so I think it was near Christmas time and she'd messaged me. I was like, I know you have to book him like beforehand, but she was like, I literally got these today. These are the last thing I have for my husband that he's got me.
Oh, God.
And so I done the flowers for her and, you know, she told me the story and I shared the story online and, you know, it was lovely to meet her and she was so lovely. And then I remember, so she was from Tala, like I'm from Dublin, she is from Tala. We were only about 20 minutes down the road from each other. And then I remember I was in Carrigan Shannon at a hen's in this random bar that we all went into just to have one drink. And I went into the bathroom and this girl was crying in the bathroom. Oh, sorry, I was in the cubicle and I heard someone, it was like they were crying and I came out and I was like, oh my God, I was like, yeah, okay, like, you know, you're all right, you want me to get a friend? She's like, oh, I'm actually crying with laughter. She said, my friend's in there laughing, blah, blah, blah. I was like, all right. I was like, grand. I was like, I didn't want her to be upset, you know. And her friend then came out of the bathroom and I was washing my hands. The next time I looked at her, she's like, oh my God, Laura, it was the woman whose flowers I had done for her. Now, I hadn't seen her since I'd done her flowers and given them back to her in like the February. And this was like the August time or whenever it was, or the May or something. And the two of us stood chatting and she was like, this is the girl that done my husband's flowers. And
that's wild.
Blah, blah, blah. And we were chatting away. And then one of the girls that was on the hens with me, she started roaring crying because she obviously then was telling the story. Oh, the four of us were all standing in the bathroom having a cry together. And then we were having a lot, you know, but it was just mad how that connection then was made. Like I have a connection with this woman now that I've only ever met the one time at the time.
Yeah.
And now I have this constant connection and bond nearly with her, even though, you know, we don't know each other on a personal level, but we have this that, like, I was in Carrigan Shannon, miles away from where we live, on a random hens, well, not a random for me, but a random one for her, and we bumped into each other in this random bar.
Yeah.
And we have this weird story that we now have
works,
together.
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's crazy.
So I suppose another thing that I was interested in is when you are, you know, you receive the remains of anyone, of course, let's say it's particularly tragic circumstances or it's a child or.
Yeah.
Does that affect you or do you bring that home with you?
Yeah, because, well, I used to because my studio was at home and then I'd move now into a new studio space, but I'd still be up in bed answering emails at 10, 11 o'clock at night, you know. And even like at times, Alan has told me like, oh, you need to put the laptop down. I can't be going to bed after reading that. Or, you know, people tell me their stories and it does affect, like, you know, I'd be reading stories, like I said, about that child that passed at 6 weeks old. Like,
not just reading about them, but like when you actually handle the remains of somebody that is, you know, it's so tragic, or it's, and you're thinking about, you know, what happened, you know, the story, you know, the age and all of that. Is it different for you? Do you find some harder than others?
Yeah, I do. You know what? It's different in the sense of, like, there's a few different things, but one of the things is the size. I know that sounds silly, but like the size of a child's remains is a lot smaller than an adult's. And that's something that always kind of gets at me, is like, they didn't even get to start life really, like, you know. Or if it's someone that has passed, like say by suicide, I kind of think, my God, like these were alive a couple of weeks ago and now they're here with me. And, you know, it does take a toll on you of in, like, you have a reflection of, you kind of have to reflect on yourself of like things like, you know, I could have got annoyed over spilling a cup of tea that morning and that ruined my day. But then I get in and I'm dealing with a 24-year-old that took his life a couple of weeks before that. And I'm going, you know what? I could spill 100 cups of tea and, you know, it doesn't matter. I'm like, it puts things into perspective as well for us. And then it does, like, you know, when I, like that, when I make the videos for the person and I put the voice over to it, sometimes it could take me weeks before I can actually physically bring myself to do the voiceover for the piece because of how heartbreaking the story is, or how sad it is, or, you know, and it doesn't matter whether it's an infant or an adult, or, you know, someone that has passed tragically, or it's literally the way the family is telling you the story. You can nearly hear their grief in their text of words. You know, you can hear grief when people speak, but to be able to nearly hear it in an email it's chilling at times. Like, it's, you know, it does. Like, there'd be times I'd be sitting there reading it and I'd be in floods of tears reading it. And then I'm like, how am I supposed to make this into a voiceover? How, you know, and the family's waiting for it, or they'd be like, oh, I can't wait to see the video and hear the story that you put to it. And I'm like, it's going to take me about 4 hours to do this because I'm in bits trying to get through it. And I don't want to, not that I don't want to be sad when I'm telling the story, but I don't want to be blubbering down the microphone telling the story. I want to be able to get the story across clear and, you know, respectfully as well. Not that it's disrespectful if I'm crying, because obviously it's an upsetting topic, but I don't want to ruin it on the family. I want them to be able to listen to it and them have to cry about it, but I have to gather myself before I can do it, you know.
Have you ever done a piece for somebody that you knew?
Yeah. I am Alan's nanny and granda. Well, not for them, sorry. It was for his auntie, for her birthday. I had a bit of both of their hair inside it. And it was a little necklace. And that was a hard one to do. I kind of had to try and disconnect myself from that piece. Just because I was like, even when I was, like, their hair was in like a little bit of tinfoil. And I was going like, I remember, like, you know, their hair, like it was yesterday. Like, you know, I still have them in my head. Like, and I'm always like, sometimes I'm still nearly in disbelief that his granddad has passed, because his granddad was similar. Like, he was so full of life. Up until he passed, you know. And it's like, I remember just being like, right, I have to not think of who this is and just make the piece, and then afterwards I can think of who it was, you know. So that was hard. And then I remember the first set of flowers that I'd done. So I'd been practicing preserving flowers for about a year before I start offering the service, and the first set of flowers that I actually preserved were my granddad's one from 2022. And I remember that, like, I was shaking doing it, because I was like, I'd been doing it for about a year with just flowers that I bought in the shops to practice with, and it was grand. But I just remember, I was like, this is my granddad's flowers. So I was like, these have to be perfect. No matter what happens, these have to be perfect. And that's what was constantly in my head. And they did. They turned out perfect, thankfully. But it's nearly like I have to try disconnect who the person was. No, I haven't done anything with ashes. So my granddad and my nanny that passed, they were both cremated and they were put into a wall. The family just, that was what they wanted. And I wasn't saying to the family, oh, can I take some out and make a necklace, because that was their wishes. You know, and I respect that. So that's, you know, that's fine. But regarding the other things, it was just funeral flowers that I done for other family members then, you know. And I did like my granddad's, both my granddad's funerals, my nanny's funeral flowers and my great aunt's funeral flowers as well. And I made like a piece for my nanny of my granddad's and her sister's. So, but it was really nice to be able to give it to them afterwards, you know. It was kind of like, this is something lovely from that day. They were beautiful flowers. I remember my great aunt Nellie, like her spray on top of the casket was so beautiful. So many colourful flowers in it. It was gorgeous. And her coffin had beautiful like roses on the side of it. She was really big into, she was religious, like, you know, and she had the little flower was her like angel or guardian that she prayed to. So when I got to make the little flower piece for my nanny, I thought that was really something quite special then to give to her, like the little flowers inside it for my aunt, you know. Mm. But yeah, it is. It's kind of have to disconnect. That's the kind of in short.
And what do you feel it does for people when they get these pieces from you? You know, how much does it mean to them?
Well, from chatting to people and that, it means a lot. And I'm not saying it in a big-headed way. I'm not that kind of person. Like, it's they're always very thankful for it. And it's also like that they get to bring up the conversation of the person again. It's like they get to talk about them again and get to have them with them again. And now when I give people back their stuff as well, there's tears. You know, I know they kind of get upset. Some people get upset when they give me the ashes or the hair or the clothing. And then when they receive it and they open it, it is overwhelming. And I get quite overwhelmed because I'm also nervous because I'm like, what if they don't like this? Or what if it's not how they like it to be? And thankfully, I've never had that happen. But, you know, I've had people that, you know, just even before they open the box or open what they've got off me, they start crying.
Mm.
Because they say it's like having the person
with them.
And especially if it's a jewellery piece, they're like, I get to have them with me now everywhere I go. Or, you know, like I had before a bride whose father passed away a couple of weeks before her wedding and he didn't get to walk her down the aisle. But she had a necklace down with his ashes in it. And she said, this is him now walking me down the aisle. This is how he'll be with me on my day. You know, hearing that's going to upset anyone, you know, like I'd be biting the inside of my lip. But as I said earlier, unless the person cries, then I'll cry with them. Sometimes I will get teary eyed. Don't get me wrong. I'm quite soft at times. But I think as well, over the couple of years of doing it, I've tried to build up a stronger front. Still very empathetic with people, obviously. But as I said, I don't want to get upset and upset them.
Just interesting that I'm like, just jump to that there. I'm like, don't feel like you have to put on any strong. You're a human.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is a lot. It's you're literally with the people. And it's no more than anyone that anybody at all. And I'm so interested to talk to more people like undertakers, etc.
Yeah.
Anyone that is front and center.
Mm-hmm.
You know, either handling remains or, you know, connecting with or speaking to someone who's deeply grieving. Mm-hmm. You're human. It's a difficult thing. It's not the same as, and even doctors, I'd love to talk to some doctors who have to sit down.
I was literally thinking that when you were saying, like, I always remember, like, even the staff in the hospice, like, what, like, they get to know the people there, even if it's only for a week, they still, you know, and then the person passed. And I just think, how are they not crying?
Yeah.
I'm like, I remember passing a room in the hospice and there was a man in a bed and he had his family around him and he was sitting up chatting. Obviously, he was sick. He was in a hospice. But I just passed the door and I seen all his family around him and I just start roaring crying.
Mm.
And I just kept saying, all these people in a week, 2 weeks time are going to be so heartbroken over that person. And I just don't know how nurses or doctors or staff do it. Like a friend of mine, like she was a carer in a nursing home. And I remember we were like all 18, 19 in college starting to grow. And she was a carer. That was her job. And I remember then she got into the nursing home and she'd be saying, oh, I have my, you know, Peggy or whatever, you know, oh, she's great. And she was nearly like another nanny to her. And then she'd pass. And she was like, we can't cry like in front of the family and stuff. Mm. And I was like, like you've been minding this woman for years. How are you not allowed to cry? Now she'd cry around us, But she was like, it's something like a respect to, or it's like, you're not supposed to have that. Look, like,
if you're
connection.
In the hospital, yeah. I had my sister die in the hospital. And if I was having to hold up a nurse crying, it probably wouldn't be fucking great.
Like,
you know what I mean? But it's just, it's just something that I have come to.
I just think I'm too emotional of a person. Like, I know I say I put on a front. As I said, 9 times out of 10, I'll cry with the person, or I'll get teary eyed, or when I'm reading the story, I'll be sobbing.
It's interesting, isn't
it? Yeah, it's just, it's kind of like, I don't want to start them off because it's not my person to be grieving, if that makes sense. It's their person, even though in a way, which I'm saying it's not my person to grieve, I kind of do grieve for the person as well, because I'm hearing their story, I'm hearing about their life, their loved ones, you know. And it is sad. I'd be sad. I'm like, oh my God, like, this person had such a lovely life. They had such lovely people around them. And it's so sad to see that they're gone and know how loved they were. And it is. I do grieve for, like, it wouldn't be the same grief that I'd have for my own for family members or people close to me.
Yeah, it's like my retreats that I do. People come and they bring the photos. So I could have 100 people in the room, so that they could have, you could have 100 plus photos.
Yeah.
Because maybe someone's lost their mom and their dad.
Yeah.
Or their brother and their dad or whatever.
Yeah.
And all of those photos come to the retreat. And then I stand looking at them all. And I always cry because I'm like, I'm looking at them. And I'm like, wow, I wonder what you were like.
Yeah.
What did you do?
You know what's so lovely about that is that that person was so loved.
Yeah.
That they have someone, obviously everyone's going to grieve when people pass, but they have some, they were so loved that they have someone going to like one of your workshops, bringing their actual photo with them. And
they mattered.
And
they still do.
And it's so, there's something so lovely and warm about that, even though it is so sad. But there's just something, like, I think if I passed tomorrow and someone brought my photo to a grief service, I'd be delighted. I'd be like, oh my God, thanks so much. You know, it's like, I didn't think, not that I don't think I'm a big part in people's lives, but you know what I mean? Obviously everyone is in their own family's lives and that, but I just think it's so lovely. Like when people send me on photos of their the people that have passed like that, it's near, when I put a face to the name as well, then that's quite hard, you know?
I think you see the best in people actually around death, in the best of human emotions.
Yeah.
That, you know what I mean? Like there's so much care and love.
Yeah.
Expressed for the people that are gone. It's just a shame, I think, that we don't do that with the people that are here.
That are alive. Yeah, exactly.
You
know,
it kind of teaches you that, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, definitely. Like, as I said earlier on, like about treating people how you'd like to be treated, like you just don't know what anyone's going through during their day. And it is always having that kind of mindfulness in a way of, you know, some people could be having a bad day. You know, like it's weird. My body reacts more than my head, if that makes sense. My body will know stuff is coming up before my head does.
Yeah.
Like all this week.
Makes perfect sense.
Yeah, like all this week. Anxious. Last week and this week, haven't been feeling great. I woke up with a bit of a sore throat and I've been grand, not a bother, feeling run down, feeling real sorry for myself. And then I'm looking at the calendar going, oh yeah, it's my granddad's anniversary this week. My head didn't know, but my body knew, because my body's still reliving the 6 weeks that I spent going to and from the house and the hospice, you know. And my mind then catches up and goes, oh, remember that. And then you're kind of living day by day of, where was I that day? Oh, that time was when he passed, or that's the time that I went to see him, or that's the time when we were here and there, or, you know, it's my body catches up.
I relate to that every year. I get really anxious and I forget and I'm like, why am I so anxious? And I'm like, oh, I look at the date.
Yeah.
And a psychologist I had on one time actually said that the emotions remember, you know, that feeling of anxiety or that feeling of sadness or heaviness.
Yeah.
They have a memory, emotional memory, as opposed to like your thinking brain, you know, that you feel it in your body. Yeah. Like, you know.
But that makes so much sense, doesn't it? Because it's a trauma in a way. Your body goes through not a physical trauma, but a mental trauma. And like your body holds so much trauma inside.
Yeah. Yeah. For sure.
Like you might look fine walking around day to day, but something can trigger, like that can of Coke today. When I picked that up, I was like, oh my God. Like, you know, something just triggers little things like in your body. So it is, it's like your body knows, because obviously your head's going 90 miles an hour of what am I doing later? What am I cooking for dinner? Yeah. What's tomorrow? What's the next day? And then it's your body's like, why is my body, when you kind of check in with yourself, like, why am I feeling like this? Why am I so run down? Why am I feeling a bit down in the dumps? Everything's fine. Like everything's going grand around me. There's nothing bad happening. And then like that, you check and you're like, oh God, that makes so much sense. Mm. Like this is happening this week or next week. Or, you know, it's like, oh, I'm reliving. My body's gone through the motions of stuff that has happened in the past, you know?
Mm, yeah, for sure. Mm. Thank you so much for coming in. It's
thank
been
you for
such
having
a
me.
Pleasure to talk to you. What you do is really important work.
Yeah.
It's really important and it's like an honor, isn't it, really?
It is, yeah. I see it as an honor. Definitely see it as like when I see someone order or they reach out to me to place an order, like it's not like any other job that I've ever done that like, you know, you get a sale and you think, yes, I got a sale. That's great. To me, it's such an honor that mm-hmm. someone has
yeah.
asked me to look after their loved one.
Yeah.
It's just such an honor and a privilege to be able to make something for them and to be able to say, look, you know, these are going to be in good hands. I'm going to look after them as if they were my own. And that's it, you know?
Yeah. I think you're very special with what you do.
Thank
I think
you.
You're the right person to do it. I also think that you're very intuitive. I think you should go down the road of like Reiki and that stuff too.
I've had a few people say that to me before in the past, which is funny because I only started. It's funny because when my granddad passed, I actually done my first Reiki session.
Mm.
And the woman that I go to, Audrey, that does my Reiki, she is a friend of mine and she does Reiki. And I kept saying, I don't know what that is. Like, it seems all a bit mad. Like, and she was like, come to me. Because she knew, obviously, I'd gone through a lot with the deaths in the family. And so she's like, come to me and we'll just see what you think. And I'm going to her now about 2 years. I go probably every 3 months to her. And it's just like such a weight lifted. And she always says it to me as well, like, you know, because of what I do, it's like I need to cleanse from working with
I'm really overdue. My friends keep saying to me, like, after retreats and this.
Yeah,
and
they're
like, you need to go and get your energy cleared. I'm sure I haven't managed
to. Well, a few people have said to me, like, you need to do Reiki or you need to teach. And I'm like, no, I'm like, I'm fine with what I'm doing at
the
moment.
You sound to me quite intuitive. I do think that.
Yeah.
Down the road, you might be doing
that. Maybe someday.
Yeah. There's a reason why you're around all this.
Yeah.
All
definitely,
the time,
yeah.
you know?
Yeah.
But look, thank you so much for coming on. It's been
so
lovely to
me.
Talk to you and for sharing. I appreciate it.
Thank
Thanks
you for
so much,
having
Laura.
Me. It means a lot.
Not
thank
at
you.
All.